I'm going to tell you about a research project which I'm working on to better understand the architectures of planetary systems using the Kepler data. And this is not just the number of planets and the types of planets, but we're concentrating on how planets, and especially planetary orbits, relate to one another within a given system. And this is the third in a series of papers that have spanned most of the decade. First paper in 2011, second in 2014. This we're hoping to submit within a few months, but anyway, what we're doing is we're using the whole Kepler data set. We're using better stellar parameters, a more carefully vetted code, better planetary parameters, and with a larger and cleaner sample, we're able to look at planetary interrelationships as functions of particular properties. And I'm going to even include some things, which is the properties of the host star in terms of, say, the period ratios of neighboring planets. And just one thing, whenever you do statistical studies of Kepler, whether you're doing this for occurrence rates or anything else, always use planet candidates. Do not use so-called confirmed planets, because the biases in confirmation slash validation techniques are very severe. Don't use just, yes, use, yes, don't restrict yourselves to the things with Kepler numbers. You can do restrictions, but that's not a good one for statistical studies.
So how many are still candidates?
It's about half.
Half of what? All of the KOIs?
Pretty much, yeah. I think there are about as many candidates that are not considered confirmed planets than confirmed. Right. Verified planets. So that's, yes, either confirmed or validated. I think a little over half the sample.
So what's going to happen to all these? Going forward.
I mean, yeah, I think.
Oh, it's a series. I mean, they're confirmed planets, they're validated planets, they're false positives, and then half of the KOIs are just candidates, and they'll
be mostly the singles.
There are still multis, but. It's a statistical mission, and what we're doing is we're getting rid of low signal to noise and things like that for most of our cuts, but not based on whether it's listed as confirmed on NEXI or something like that. And we're actually developing a catalog that is somewhat of a special purpose catalog for our study, but actually it should be a good general catalog, except if you're doing occurrence rates, because it is, the goal is to get as good properties as we reasonably can for a large sample of planets, as opposed to getting uniform properties from a uniform sample. And what we're doing is we're comparing properties for different multiplicities. For instance, it's well known that there are more big planets in singles than in multis, much larger fraction of large planets among the single candidates than the candidates where there's multiple candidates per star. And what we're doing is we look at things like that for different multiplicities, and there's not much change beyond from doubles, twos to threes to fours to fives. We're doing a lot of period ratio studies, and that's going to be the emphasis of my talk here. Maybe I'll talk a little bit, if I have time, about three-body resonances. But I'm also going to focus in on a few things that are very recent results that are kind of tantalizing about properties depending on stellar properties. And these period ratio studies, we have a distribution of period ratios, but there are all sorts of different ways to view this. And I'm going to show you a lot of different ways because it illustrates biases in how you sort the data, how you collect the data, which are relevant to a lot of problems in exoplanets. This gives the period ratio of neighboring planet pairs, the cumulative distribution function. And it only goes up to 5. You can go up further and you get a little bit more, but we normalize this for 5. That's the area, up to 5 is where everything interesting occurs in this region or smaller. And you notice that about half of them have the ratio of the outer planet to the one just inside it less than 2. There are very few where the period ratio is small. There are no co-orbital planets seen. And actually, the very lowest systems have some problems. In one case, we realized that we have a comparable stellar type binary, and one planet is orbiting one of the stars, the other planet is orbiting the other star. Their period ratio is less than 1.1. Would be unstable for planets those sizes for reasonable mass estimates. But you do get a lot down as low as about 1.5 period ratio. And in our solar system, typical, well, is more than 2. Earth to Venus is not. Earth to Mars is just a little under 2. Venus to Mars, to Mercury, much more than 2. And in the outer solar system, more than 2, except Uranus and Neptune aren't that different from 2. So this is the conventional way of displaying a period ratio, not as a cumulative distribution function, but actually as bins in little regions of period ratio space. And you can see here, we mark where there are mean motion resonances, where the ratio of the orbital periods are near the ratio of small integers, and especially the ones where those ratios, those integers just differ by 1. That means every time the inner planet passes the outer planet, they're at the same longitude, and kicks build up. And we expected to see a lot of excess pairs in resonance. We don't really see that. We see excess pairs just outside of resonance, but in some cases that's balanced by a dip, like inside the 2-to-1 resonance, just inside resonance. And now, this is a histogram using periods, using bins of different widths. And you're starting at very small, and then you're going wider and wider bins. And the advantage of narrow bins is you're resolving features much better. But the disadvantage is that you've got a lot of stochastic noise because you don't have many planets per bin. So you get this dip near the 2-to-1 resonance, and you know, a nice little gap, one or two bins. But as your bins get bigger, that gap starts going up and up, and it totally disappears. No. Good question. Okay, this, there's another arbitrary aspect of histograms, and that is, where do you start the bin? So it's the size of the bins and what phase you do. So should, for instance, the bins start at, if your width is a tenth, do you start a bin at 2.0, the next bin at 2.1, bin before that would be at 1.9, or do you start at 1.95, then 2.05, and then you get, you're getting different things. And if you look at that gap right inside the 2-to-1 resonance, it fills in and goes out based on what phase you start the bins at. Now, the effect of the bin size is more severe than of the phasing.
Is there any selection effect against 2-to-1? Like, is it just hard at the spot? Because every second transit is deeper or something, isn't it?
No, because they're not, they're not transiting. They're two orbits to one orbit, but they're generally, very rarely are they transiting at the time that the inner planet passes the outer planet. Yeah. So it's that these perturbations build up. There are gaps in resonances, for instance, with Jupiter and the asteroid belt. Okay. So it depends strongly on the width of the bins and somewhat on the phase. Now, the latter one, yeah, it's a smaller problem, but we can deal with that. We don't need to choose a phase. We can do this continuously. And we can do for every point, we can, instead of just for a region of points, we add everything up. For every point, we add up the number of planets within a certain distance on either side in period ratio. So this is, in statistical jargon, it's a top hat kernel density estimator. And, oops, this one. The movie is slightly different. So now, here, what we're doing is we're varying the widths of the kernel of the top hat, but we haven't lost this binning aspect. Now, there's certainly features that appear and disappear, but in a sense, this is like, as far as I'm concerned, a better version of that first movie that I showed, because it has more information. So basically, we can get rid of one problem. And if we show a movie, we can get a lot of this information, but it's not as simple as just getting one size. There's another way of doing it. One of the problems is if you have bins and you choose the width of your bins or of your top hat, you're going to have there are regions in period ratio space where there are a lot of planets and other regions where there are few planet pairs. And you really want to have a wider top hat, wider kernel, in regions which have fewer planets, so you can capture them and still get adequate statistics. So what you can do is you can actually say, instead of how many planet pairs in a certain region of period ratio space, you want to put how many, you want to ask, how big a region of space do you need in period ratio? How much do you have to move in order to get a certain number of planet pairs? So you're essentially taking a numerical derivative. And this is what we did in the first architectures paper. And we got these spikes right in your resonance because you don't have to move very far to get, in this case, four planet pairs. But there's a lot of spikes. I have no idea what this thing is because it's pretty far out. And there's a lot of, yeah, that's a very weak resonance, incidentally. Very weak. There are many more that we don't see any sign of. So we don't think that's the real cause. So what we can do is the same trick that we did previously. Well, this is the mask, how many planet pairs we're including. And you see with a very small mask, you get spiky. Then you get something that are nice features. And then you get something which is just the average trend. Part of the problem is that the average trend is somewhat difficult to figure out. We don't have a good, nice, clean formula we can use.
This is not corrected for
completeness. Yes, yes. But what we're most interested in is the microstructure here.
Yeah, I understand.
And yes, yes. You have to do something very different. You have to do the correction if you want to get the trend. But of course, if we wanted to separate this into a trend and local features, then we wouldn't need that type of correction. And you see that there are spikes and gaps that merge, that disappear, etc. So this is, I'm going to show you a few and talk to them. This is individual, this is just two pairs. So it's a lot of noise. Because you can just get coincidentally. 24 pairs. Now we see the spikes outside of resonance. And that shows the spike outside the 2-to-1 resonance. That's a very strong resonance. The highest spike is just outside the 3-to-2 mean motion resonance. Then you go inward a bit and you see a spikes outside the 4-to-3 and 5-to-4 resonances. Now, it's not quite so simple because there's that one spike a little beyond the red arrow, which is not at any particular resonance. And you've got some structure outside between the 1.5, between the 3-to-2 resonance and the 2-to-1 resonance that is, now, it's suggestive maybe, but not like that spike outside at the 2.16. You get a bigger mass size, those two spikes have merged, just outside 2 and 2.16. You don't have that. They're not that. Now here, you're getting actually a dip slash spike. What is that? Because you have that dip just inside 2-to-1. So this was as, so you can see the finer structure in regions where there may be many planet pairs. Okay. So this is kind of the tutorial that I figured was okay to have posted. It's, the numbers are kind of moving on, but the rest is kind of take with a grain of salt, but it's interesting stuff. And they're very tentative results from the last few days. So hopefully the recording can stop before I go to the next slide.